Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Andrew.
Here we go.
What am I going to do with you? So, just so our listeners know, it's been a long-standing thing on the internet where when you want to get really huffy with a, you know, public figure, a writer, you know, media member, whatever, you do the announced unfollow, you know, where it's not just you don't quietly just like slink away from following them on Twitter or Facebook or wherever else, but you make a point to reach out and let them know that you are cutting them out of your life forever. And most media members, you know, they laugh about it. They kind of joke about it. You know, to be honest, our very first announced unsubscribe on Open Floor, it stabbed me very deeply, Andrew. A guy wrote this long essay to basically saying how I bully you, how I'm rude to you, and essentially that, you know, I'm a jerk and, you know, I need to get essentially off my high horse. And he really went in on me, and I took it to heart. And what
right.
I really
appreciated...
That was like
9 months back, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, during the infamous, you know, Top 100 Wars episode, and I took it very personally, and you did such a nice job of standing up for me. You wrote him a long email back. You know, I sent him one line, you know, basically thanks for the feedback. You wrote like a whole passionate defense of me. We never heard from him again.
Yeah, I think he's lost. That's all good.
He's gone to history. That was our first ever announced unsubscribe, Andrew. And shockingly, despite all of our very harsh takes on all sorts of, you know, fan bases that are pretty sensitive, we never had another one after that until this week. Andrew, we got at least two announced unsubscribes thanks to your Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings takes. And I'm perusing our rundown for today's show, and I see you want to dive back into it again to address some of the topics that you raised, you know, in your, you know, passionate defense of Harry Potter. I'm not sure that's a good idea, Andrew. We're bleeding subscribers. We now have three announced unfollows thanks to you here. I don't know if we want to go back down that route again. Shouldn't we keep it to hoops here?
Yeah, look, we are going to keep it to hoops. We do have to double back one last time. If anything, to let the Lord of the Rings fans be heard, I don't really have that much more to say, but I have to say Frodo Nation has made its voice heard loud and clear. It's kind of incredible how many angry emails we've gotten from Lord of the Rings fans in the last 5 or 6 days, most of which were really thoughtful, to be fair, and most of which were respectful. I will say, in addition to the people who announced that they would be unsubscribing, we also had at least 10 or 15 people say, I really like the podcast, but now I'm beginning to rethink everything. And a couple people who singled me out specifically were like, I'm usually in agreement with Sharp, but now I'm starting to look inward and question myself. And look, it's completely fair. I have admitted that I don't watch the Lord of the Rings movies, and it's all good, whatever.
Look, people know where you stand. I'm just gonna say it was a banner week for Team Golliver recruitment efforts. Okay, people were pouring
really
into
was.
Our offices around the globe signing up for my takes, even though they don't like me, they like you more usually, all because of your hot take on the fantasy genre. Look, we don't
amazing.
Need to dwell on it anymore.
Yeah, the
but we got hundreds
been, yeah, it was amazing. The response has been really entertaining, and we've enjoyed pretty much all of it. None of it has been too mean-spirited, but we should get back to basketball at the start here.
Well,
how about that?
We should, but we got hundreds of emails from We the Shire, you know? I mean, those fans were just so excited. They're, and I, look, honestly, Raptors fans, Blazers fans, the other fan bases that are pretty angsty out there, guys, step your game up, man. Like, Team Frodo is really, really serious. We had guys who were saying they were like, basically professors of this genre. They had studied it in college. I mean, it was really something else. You got schooled hard, but now let's talk hoops, because I just mentioned the Raptors fan base and the Blazers fan base. Both those teams, I thought, played a pretty central role in this week's developments. Portland played that very hotly contested game against Houston up in Portland, where Harden kind of took over down the stretch. And then, obviously, LeBron James put together a masterpiece to beat Toronto. I think it was like 132-129 in Cleveland this week. To me, those were the two most interesting games of the week. And don't you think we should take these two teams one by one?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because you and I, earlier in the week, we're talking about how it was the dog days of the NBA season, and I think your exact words are, these dog days are doggier than usual, and that was completely true. But then, after a weekend of trying to convince ourselves that we liked college basketball, watching Rockets Blazers on Tuesday night was phenomenal. And then the Raptors and Cavs on Wednesday night was just as good. So it's nice to have good basketball to talk about again. And it's nice to, it was like a palate cleanser after diving into college hoops. So let's start in Portland, because Clayton asks, did the Blazers hold the 3 seed from here? Was that win streak fool's gold? Is it possible that all the players they overpaid are actually starting to develop and fulfill their potential? And then he curses out Myles Leonard at the end of that. But beyond Myles Leonard, he wants to know about the supporting cast. So what do you think? What do you take away from that Houston game?
Well, here's my first takeaway. Yeah, imagine that James Harden in isolation and LeBron James 17 assists, no turnovers, is going to be better than Syracuse's 2-3 zone. I don't know how we didn't see that coming. In terms of that game, I think confirmation bias would say, well, look, when push came to shove, there was 2 All-Stars on the court, and they were Houston's 2 All-Stars.
Yeah.
You know, James Harden, Chris Paul. Damian Lillard no-showed. Where is he? You know, I think, our jokes previously, or our quips previously about how he's sort of, inconsistent, maybe here some nights, streaky shooter. It all depends on how well he's shooting, whether they're going to be good or not. I mean, those are arguments you could make as a takeaway from that game. That's not what I took away from that game, because he's right to single out their supporting cast, because a guy like Aminu, a guy like Harkless, even Evan Turner, and then Yusuf Nurkic, had a phenomenal game in that game. But this is not just like they showed up for national TV and they were randomly good for one night. Those guys have been playing pretty well over the winning streak, and they've been playing collectively better than they have really at any point, to me, the supporting cast, at any point over these last 2 years. And in some cases, it's a dramatic difference. I mean, Evan Turner was a lost cause last year. He was a punchline. He's not quite that anymore. Yusuf Nurkic started the season very slow, and it felt like, I wrote like a 4,000-word piece about him, and I had a solid 3 weeks there where I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't
Do
have
we
spent
even run this? Yeah.
6 weeks of my life with this piece. But, he shows up big. They get into some really interesting stuff late in that game where they're staying big and trying to create, philosophical mismatches with Houston, who obviously likes to go small late in that game.
Yeah.
So there was lots of very interesting takeaways from that game, and they were competitive despite an off night from Damian Lillard. And to me, the takeaway is, yeah, the Blazers are pretty legit. Like, if you're a series, a second round series with Houston, if you're the Blazers, you're not scared. I mean, it's clear they do not fear Houston. They're not as good as Houston. Houston mm-hmm. should win that series, but Houston will have to beat them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I loved watching Nurkic try to keep up with the Rockets small ball lineup. He looked like he was going to need an IV after like the second quarter, and he played well the entire night. It was pretty impressive from him. And I would echo your sentiments about their supporting cast. I think my problem with Portland is I don't trust Aminu and Harkless to show up consistently over the course of a 7-game series. And granted, like, Dame and CJ McCollum absolutely will show up more than they did against Houston the other night. To answer Clayton's question, I don't think the win streak was fool's gold at all. And I think you're right that, like, a lot of those guys have found roles that make sense for them with this team. And it's just all clicking. Like, they are in a really good spot, in a really good rhythm, and it's going to be really fun to watch. I think for me with the Blazers, where I come down is, like, and I wrote about this a little bit earlier in the week, is we don't have to trick ourselves into thinking that this is like a title contender to appreciate this team, because I think the best way to look at them is to say that they don't have the talent to hang with Golden State or Houston. And honestly, my read on that game was a little bit different, because I think obviously you can go glass half full and say that they kept it that close with Lillard and McCollum not playing well. Like, that's a great sign. But I also just think that, like, in a playoff series, the talent gap would become more obvious as things unfolded, in a playoff series with Houston, that is. But I think it's just going to be really fun to watch this team try to pull off those upsets and try and roll through the playoffs, because they're not even going to be overwhelming favorites in round one, but it'll be fun to just watch them try to keep this going, because I like all their role players. I love, like, Damian Lillard is so much fun to root for. CJ McCollum can score in like 25 different ways, and it's just a really fun team.
Yeah, I think the trick for them is if they do wind up getting Golden State in round two, they could put up a strong performance. They could be clicking on all cylinders and still get swept, and that would be very demoralizing. And
yeah,
that would not be an accurate reflection of what their season is. I'm not saying that they would beat Houston in a series, but I think that series would go six or seven. It's not going to be just
really
an easy sweep where, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think highly, very, very highly of the Rockets. But when you've got that many weapons, and when these role guys who in previous postseasons have just completely disappeared, when they're in situations where they're getting wide open looks because both Dame and CJ are creating those opportunities for them consistently, and they're getting to it pretty comfortably, I think it would be an entertaining series. Maybe not seven, but I think it would be six.
Yeah, I'm not as bullish, but I promise I will be rooting like hell for the Blazers to push them to six or seven. I will say, watching the Rockets in a big game environment, like, I can't imagine how demoralizing it must feel to try to guard that team for 48 minutes, because it's a little bit different than like the Warriors experience, because with the Warriors, you're dealing with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, two of the greatest shooters of all time, Kevin Durant, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer, probably one of the 20 best players to ever play, and Draymond Green, All-Star, All-NBA, et cetera, et cetera. But with Houston, it's like James Harden and Chris Paul will take over for little stretches, but then there are also stretches where it's like Luke Mbamute is raining threes on you, and like the ghost of Trevor Ariza is somehow still hitting threes, and PJ Tucker and like Nene will give them six or seven good minutes, and it's just like, I can't imagine feeling that helpless playing a team that's relying on some of these guys.
Yeah, one thing I'd say in terms of Clayton's question, I think Portland's going to stick in the three seed. They're three losses up on Oklahoma City. They've got, a bunch of home games left. So I think they're going to be okay there. I don't see,
Yeah,
I definitely don't think the win streak was fool's gold. They beat a lot of good teams within that win streak. They weren't just, beating up on
the
tanking sisters of the world. Yeah, but in terms of your point about the Rockets' offense, look, I need to double back on behalf of my guy James Harden, because somebody on this podcast was calling him out for the crazy step-back threes he takes late in games. How'd you feel about those step-back threes against Portland?
Yes.
Not such bad shots now when he's draining them over everybody, looking off defenders, doing his little tiptoeing and getting to his shots. I mean, you know what that really reminded me of, having covered hundreds of Blazers game at the Moda Center?
Uh-huh.
The only guys who go into that building and thrive in that kind of environment to the same degree that Harden did, Kobe and LeBron. I mean, those are basically the names that come to mind. I mean, Kobe used to love toying with Blazer maniacs. I mean, that was one of his favorite things, to just torture them. And LeBron obviously does that to everybody, and I think he sometimes gets up for those Blazers games because of the Nike connections. But Harden was just in that mode where he was like, oh, you guys are really excited about this team. You're feeling really good about yourself. Okay, I'm going to stomp on your throat. And that hasn't always been Harden. There's been times in his career where we all wish he made better decisions, or he was able to get to better shots, or he didn't do reckless things with the ball and create turnovers in those situations. And the guy's just on a different planet right now. I think Mike D'Antoni called him the best offensive weapon he's ever seen overall, or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's saying a lot, and I don't know how you guard him. If he's shooting that well from outside.
So if the step back three is falling, you can't do anything with James Harden. And that is sort of the biggest question, is whether he's going to be able to hit those step back threes in big moments in the playoffs. And we'll see. But you're right that watching him in Portland was awesome, because he was locked in. Chris Paul was pretty locked in too. And really, like, it's so unfair that when Portland goes to the bench, they're counting on like Shabazz Napier to power them. And it's when Houston sits Harden, you still have to deal with Chris Paul, and he is just like picking teams apart out there. So, like, there's no question. The Rockets are really good. And credit to the Blazers fans because they were pretty turned up for that entire game. And it really, like, lent a sort of playoff atmosphere to everything. And again, like, it was one of the best games I've seen all year.
Look, you'd be excited too if Aminu all of a sudden can't miss from three. You know, like, I mean, this guy's out there, you know, using like Lord of the Rings style, like, you know, catapults to launch the ball towards the rim, and they're just going it time after time after time. It's like, wow.
You know what,
who,
man?
Is this guy?
So it's the fantasy basketball playoffs right now. I'm not going to go too far into Team Sharp because, honestly,
how are we doing? How's Team Sharp? You know, I'm your biggest fan. How's it going?
No, this season has gotten very, very depressing, and I'm relying on Devin Booker, who hasn't played in like 2 weeks because the Suns are tanking, and Klay Thompson is hurt, and it, like, my team is on life support. And anyways, I thought very seriously about picking Al-Farouq Aminu up off of the waiver wire before my playoff matchup this week, and I didn't do it, picked up Montrezl Harrell instead, and Aminu, so watching Aminu was really painful because he turned into like, I don't even know, like James Posey against the Rockets, and that it really would have helped Team Sharp, but so it goes. Never play fantasy sports is, I guess, the big takeaway there. Should we move to the Raptors, though?
We should.
Okay, so Tim says, if the Raptors make the finals, we need a live game crossover podcast episode between Open Floor and the starters. I want to hear Tas Mellis' reaction when Golliver claims that DeRozan wouldn't even make the starting lineup for the Warriors. So, first of all, let me just start by saying I would love to do a crossover finals podcast with the starters. I really like all those guys, but I'm also not very close with any of those guys, and I would feel compelled to, like, mumble through a 5-minute apology on behalf of Open Floor after like 2 years of Raptor slander. So
come on.
Whenever we do that podcast, it will definitely open with an awkward apology from me. But yes, I'm in.
Yeah, I never apologize. Look, I love those guys too. We had Lee Ellis on during your absence last summer. He was great. You know, mm-hmm. Skeets had a great line this week about how Sriracha is like the classy man's ketchup. I mean, I want to steal that one, but I'll cite him on that. But that's one to put in your pocket and break out with your real world friends. That's a pretty good line.
Sure.
But here's the thing with the Raptors, and it's much like my take on the Blazers, where confirmation bias would say, neener, 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 LeBron owns you, ha, 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 let's all mock the Canadians, it's so funny. Uh-huh. DeRozan's looking for the whistle again at the buzzer. Why is he doing that? Why is he just not shooting? He couldn't hit a three-pointer. That is one way to look at that game, and I'm going to grant anyone who wants to look at the game that way, I just had a different take from that game. I'm not sure Cleveland can stop Toronto. You know, and when we're looking at this as a postseason matchup, I mean, Toronto blew them out of the building when they played in January at home. They put up 129 easily on this Cavaliers team. And when you look at the individual matchups, if the Raptors trust their offense and if they just, you know, absorb the body blows from the shots that, you know, LeBron is going to be creating with his 17 assists and all of the stuff he's going to get going to the basket foul-wise, and they just continue to trust that system and keep going, I don't think Cleveland has the personnel to stop them. I think it's very possible LeBron, you know, goes deep into his bag and pulls out a series win against Toronto. But framing this as, you know, Toronto is this huge underdog in that series because of what happened the last 2 years is dead wrong. I just think it's completely off. And so I dug into the numbers a little bit, Andrew, and I'm not going to bore you with sort of like the nitty gritty in terms of like point differential and all this stuff. But bottom line, when you look at LeBron's career, there's a very simple rule. When he's on the more talented team in a playoff series, or the teams are relatively even in talent, you know, judging by their regular season point differential, he basically never loses. And the only losses are years and years ago, like the Mavericks series, which we all point to, the 2011 finals, or, you know, a couple of other ones earlier in his career. He's basically impossible to stop if he's got a team around him that's equal or better than the competition. But when he's outgunned, when his team is not the most talented team as judged by point differential, he's only won once, and it was the dramatic comeback, the 3-1 comeback against the Warriors. Every other time during his career, whether it's against the Spurs in the 2014 finals, whether it's like the 2008 Celtics who knocked him out, whether it's the 2006 Pistons, he's lost every time. He's 1-6 in those kinds of situations where his team is outgunned. And when you look at the Raptors this year, their consistent excellence, I mean, their point differential is +8 this year. They're right up there with the Raptors, the Rockets and the Warriors. They have been excellent, much better than they've been these last 2 years. And you look at Cleveland's point differential, which is right around 0. I mean, it's the worst LeBron team we've seen in a decade. When you put those two factors together, the best version of the Raptors and one of the weakest teams LeBron's had, and you put them together in a series, I'm not saying we should be viewing Toronto as the favorites to win the series, but I'm just saying this is one of the biggest challenges of LeBron James's postseason career, potentially, if he faces the Raptors. And I know that sounds weird to say, but just remember, this guy usually has the best team. I don't think he has the best team this year.
Yeah. No, it's a very fair point. And look, even in that Raptors game Wednesday night, like, it was awesome to watch, but it's still the sort of the same story with the Cavs, where, like, when LeBron plays out of his mind, and I think he finished with, like, 36 and 17 assists, didn't have a single turnover. It was unbelievable. And it was the type of game where I was watching it thinking about how crazy the NBA will be in like 5 or 6 years or maybe 8 years. Like, whenever LeBron leaves, there really is going to be just a massive vacuum, because we've become so used to seeing him just do incredible shit on a weekly basis. And it's been like this for a decade now. So, but the thing is, he has to play at that level for the Cavs to have a chance. And that's been true
at home,
all year.
You know?
Yeah, at home. And I mean, I like his chances to play at that level 4 times in any playoff series against an Eastern Conference team. But you're right that, like, there is more room for any sort of challenger this year than we've seen in years with him.
There's no question. And also, the other flip side of that equation is Toronto is a better challenger than any of the other teams he's faced in the Eastern Conference in years. So you look at their point differential, they're better than those Pacers teams. They're better than the Hawks team that everybody loved to slurp, you know, a couple of years ago. They're better than themselves last year.
On,
they're better than the Celtics from previous years.
Hold on,
it's
though.
The best team by... Hold on, though. Slow down. They're the best team he has had to face in the Eastern Conference basically since the 2008 Celtics. And to me, look, you can't judge everything based off point differential, but it's a really good way to compare across years, because it takes a lot to keep your number that high. You have to go on these long winning streaks like the Raptors have gone on. You have to have a lot of big wins against bad teams. You have to be able to beat some good teams too.
Yeah.
And Toronto is definitely better than those versions. And here's the last thing I'd say. Their offense, there's only 2 teams LeBron has faced in the playoffs with a better offensive efficiency than Toronto has right now. Those 2 teams are last year's Warriors and the 2016 Warriors. They have a better offense than everybody else. And Cleveland's defense is the worst defense LeBron's ever had with the team that made the playoffs during his career. That is a toxic combination, you know. And I'm not going to bet against LeBron James, and I'm certainly not going to be flying the Canadian flag, even though I am 1/4 Canadian and therefore can make fun of Canadians whenever I want. I'm just saying, like, if I was a Raptors fan and I was inclined to bet on my own team just for fun, this is the year to do it.
Yeah. Can I play devil's advocate, though? Haven't offensive numbers gone up across the board over the last couple years? So, like, when you say the Raptors' offense grades out better than any team that LeBron has ever faced in the playoffs, like, beyond, except for the Warriors, I'm not sure how much that really means, right?
They have gone up, but it means a lot because you have to stop them. If you got the worst defense in the league or the worst defense of any playoff team that LeBron's played for, and you've got probably the worst playoff defense of any team that's going to be in the postseason this year, and you've got to stop them, what are you going to do?
Okay.
And so I agree. It's not quite apples to apples in terms of like a team from 5 years ago, and certainly like teams have gotten smarter in terms of how they play offense. But
right.
That's pretty damning. I mean, this is not like the Raptors are 10th rated in offense, and it's just because everyone's playing faster and smarter. They're not actually that impressive. The Raptors have a really, really good attack, and you can see it. I mean, The Cavaliers couldn't miss. You know, I mean, they're getting everyone chipping in. I think they shot like 60-something percent on three-pointers.
Yeah.
They needed to do all of that just to keep pace with Toronto. They scored practically 80 points in the first half. I mean, you know, on the road in Cleveland. And afterwards, Kyle Lowry called it a trash effort because they didn't show up defensively. And he was right. I mean, if you could do that on your off night, you're something special. And again, look, I love, you know, jabbing at the Raptors. You know, I certainly think that they overrate a couple of their individual players who I'm going to leave out, you know, of this conversation. These guys are really, really good. And my general point is this. You can still poke plenty of holes in the Raptors. Will their offense translate to the postseason? Do you trust their stars? How much is their bench going to be able to help when the rotation shortened during the playoffs? Do they have an individual guy to go against LeBron James?
Right.
Personally, I don't have answers to any of those questions. I'm just saying we need to be viewing them as, if not the favorite in that series, a team that's right there about to represent one of the biggest challenges LeBron has faced in years from the Eastern Conference.
Okay. Well, as a counterpoint to this Raptors heel turn from you, which I really do appreciate, I'm glad that you're in on the Raptors. We're long overdue for some optimism from you. I have an announcement to make. And really, it's more of an apology to the listeners because I made a mistake and I wasn't totally forthcoming last week, and I need to own it because we've been so down on the Raptors over the course of the year, and I think you were being pretty negative about them, and I didn't want to pile on. I didn't want to be that guy. But when we were talking about the 2015 Hawks last week, I think I said that the Indiana Pacers were this year's version of the 2015 Hawks. And really, the truth is, and it's indisputable, that the Raptors are this year's Hawks. And maybe LeBron is more vulnerable this year, but we're talking about a team that has been praised relentlessly for chemistry, for depth, for playing the right way. And then, like, every story about the Raptors for the last month or 6 weeks has been, the Raptors are for real. It's time to start taking this team seriously. And I'm just saying, we went through all of this with the Hawks. And so I hope that the story is different for the Raptors, because I think it would be fun to get some new blood in the finals. But you mentioned all the questions. Basically, my biggest question is, can they get easy buckets in crunch time? And they couldn't really do that Wednesday night against the Cavs. And then the other thing is, like, I think that the bench is less valuable because it's great that Jakob Poeltl and Pascal Siakam are giving them minutes all year, but, like, they had them on the court for most of the fourth quarter against Cleveland, and those guys are not good enough to play in crunch time against a really good team. I don't think. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, they're better than the Hawks. This year's Raptors are definitely better than the Hawks. They're more dominant, point differential is significantly higher.
Mm-hmm.
And this year's Cavaliers are definitely worse than that year's
Cavaliers
in 2015.
The way we talk about them is pretty much the exact same.
Okay, so let's put you to the test then. The over-under is 0.5 wins against LeBron in the series. If they're going to be this year's Hawks, that means they're getting swept, right? So
no,
are you willing to say the Raptors are going to get swept?
No, I don't think they're
okay, so you're going to back down then. All right.
No, are you going to pick the Raptors to beat the Cavs? How about that?
I don't bet against LeBron, okay? That's just a philosophical standpoint. I'm encouraging Raptors fans to bet against LeBron. Own it. This is your year. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
If I was a Raptors fan, I would be beating my chest and saying, this is our year. We're going to do it. Everyone's overlooking us and not showing us the respect. By the way, this is the same thing they've been saying for years and years. I just think that this year they may actually be right compared to previous years where they were definitely wrong. And I am also telling you, I'm not going to overlook or discount Toronto's ability to beat Cleveland this year, and that is absolutely something I did during the Atlanta year. I never gave the Hawks a chance at all, and this year is different. That's my point. And if we want to be real, how about let's split the difference here. Do you think that Toronto can push Cleveland to six games?
Yeah, and I think it has more to do with the changes to the Cavs roster than what Toronto actually has. And I think that's sort of what you're saying, is that The difference this year is that LeBron is not going to be able to go into any series in the Eastern Conference and know, or certainly like a series with the Raptors, and know that he has a clear talent advantage. And And that's different. And it could produce a different outcome. But I think that, like, as far as Toronto is concerned, I'm still very much in wait and see mode.
All right. So we're not betting? You're too afraid? You don't want to put your money where your mouth is?
On what? I mean, you're not picking the Raptors.
Okay. What I'm saying is the Raptors will win at least two games in their series against LeBron. And if they win two or more, I win. If they win one or less, you win. How's that?
No, I'm not taking that bet because I think that this Cavs team is shitty. But I also, like, and honestly, I don't want to, I like watching the Raptors play. I'm just saying that I made a mistake 2 weeks ago when I said the Pacers were this year's Hawks because the Raptors are clearly this year's Hawks. Yeah. But maybe they'll fare
you
better.
You made a bigger mistake. You made a bigger mistake right now when you tried to write the Raptors off as a team that's about to get swept in the playoffs. I can't believe you'd do that.
Don't put words in my mouth. That's not what I'm saying. Let the record reflect that the Raptors will lose in seven, not four. But
okay. This is pretty good. Here. This is the nicest. This is the nicest we've ever been to Toronto. This is good radio.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So Nate says, you guys always make a huge deal about rankings, and I must say, Andrew, your loyalty to the Wizards is questionable at best. Coming from a diehard Wiz fan, the fact that John Wall is not on your top 15, is disturbing. Wall was arguably the best player in the first and second round of last year's playoffs. He averaged 28 and 12. He straight up embarrassed Atlanta, and he gave Boston all they can handle. But you leave him off your top 15 just because he hasn't been healthy this year. Just a correction to the top 15. It's not that I left off Wall. I left off Kyrie Irving, and Kyrie Irving definitely should have been there, probably above Paul George. And I'm not going to congratulate Wall for giving Boston all they can handle and then losing the series. So I think part of the problem in DC is that we all have like lower expectations and start congratulating guys. Like the game six was amazing, but losing game seven is still kind of rough. So I think all things considered, I don't feel guilty whatsoever about keeping Wall off, but it is a good opportunity to correct the record. Kyrie Irving is definitely a top 15 player this year.
I love that you're just issuing corrections left and right as if you're like the New York Times editorial desk, and yet you're not, you're just gonna, I know you're gonna stick with Harry Potter at the end of this, which is just the worst part about all of it. But hey, now we know John Wall's burner account name is definitely Nate,
for real.
Because Nate, what are you talking about? John Wall, I mean, if we're doing a ranking of the top 15 players in the NBA this season, John Wall is not even in the top 150, is he?
I mean, we don't have to go that far, okay? I would be curious as to how far he's going to drop on next year's top 100. But I should also add, I emailed someone before coming on today. Like, I am very, very close to pulling a complete 180 and going all the way in on playoff Wall and getting completely back on the bandwagon. So prepare yourselves for that. But at the moment, it's just not like, we don't have to lie to ourselves about where he ranks among like the rest of the league.
Yeah, I mean, you guys really needed that Pacers matchup. And maybe that could still happen. I mean, that's the ideal.
Fingers crossed, big time.
To unleash playoff Wall against the Pacers backcourt, I think would be a tough matchup for them. Look, he has been good in the playoffs, so I think Nate did make a good point about that. But, you know, Nate, when Andrew's making his rankings, he's got to update him from his almost glory, 9 months ago to reflect some of the events of the last 8 months.
Just try to keep things objective. That's it. And that's why Kyrie belongs in the top 15. I completely forgot about him. But moving on. To a story that broke Thursday midday. James says, why isn't Kawhi playing? It's simple. All your other theories are rubbish. He knows LeBron is coming next year, so he doesn't want to risk further injury on a team that won't win it. This is like the 15th joke Kawhi email we've gotten over the course of the season. But for real, what is going on in San Antonio?
Well, I have two pet theories. First of all, my pet theory is that James is Kawhi's agent. He emailed us this so that we wouldn't lose the faith because it's been getting really ugly publicly. Yeah. And I think he like wants to just kind of like, you know, send us, bouquets to like, keep our minds right through the tough times and the tragedies. My second pet theory is that it'd be hilarious if the source of all these anti-Kawhi rumors was LaMarcus. Like, LaMarcus just decided, you know what? I haven't done any interviews with anyone for like 15 years. Although Michael Pena had a really good piece on LaMarcus, you know, about a week or two ago for Vice Sports. People should check that out. But, you know, LaMarcus has been like one of the worst, you know, media all-stars, you know, of the last decade. It would just be hilarious if that was like his decision. You know what? Like, I got paid by San Antonio. I got my extension. Kawhi, get out of here. This is my show now.
I'm going to call Woj and tell him about the players-only meeting. Yeah, to be clear, what we're referencing, in case you don't spend all day on basketball Twitter, Adrian Wojnarowski came out with a report on ESPN that the Spurs held a players-only meeting over the weekend imploring Kawhi Leonard to return to the court. And Kawhi, I guess, refused. And then in the wake of that report, like six different Spurs took to Twitter and started mocking Woj and calling it fake news and mocking the media in general for blowing all this out of proportion. This is like one of the strangest stories. If not for Markelle Fultz, this would be the strangest NBA story in years. And also, I think one of the things that has kept it from becoming a bigger deal is that no one in San Antonio ever really talks. So we've just been kind of guessing and people have mostly ignored it. But it continues to be completely bizarre.
Have you ever seen those books like How to Be a Gentleman? You know, like Brooks Brothers puts them out and, you know, sure. It's sort of like, you know, good etiquette and conduct. And one of the major lessons from those kinds of books is always like discretion, right? Like, and or like never let them see you sweat. Like, of course, you're not going to say anything that could be taken the wrong way, and you're always going to be stoic in the face of adversity. I mean, that's kind of, I picture Kawhi like being bombarded with questions about his teammates, like just a completely emotional Manu Ginobili saying like, Kawhi, I have killed myself for this organization for 15 years. When are you coming back? And Kawhi just doing the Brooks Brothers thing of like the blank face and the nodding. And, you know, there is a certain power to Kawhi's demeanor. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in good times, you know, it's like, oh, he's so steady. And then in bad times, it's like, well, you know, he's not getting too high or too low. Like, he's projecting power. But really what it does in the case of a crisis like this is it allows everyone to, like, write their story. So I could see some players in the Spurs locker room coming away from that meeting being like, Kawhi barely flinched when we asked him and we were begging him to come back. Of course he doesn't want to be here. And like that getting back to Woj. And then other players like Danny Green or whoever else kind of shot down the report being like, no, Kawhi didn't say anything. He just sat there, but he didn't walk out of the room. So therefore that means he's with us and he's definitely going to come back. You know, it like creates this environment where even people close to Kawhi may have a difficulty, you know, reading whatever his intentions are. And that could be part of the reason why we as, you know, basketball consumers are getting all these mixed messages is because Kawhi's just basically like, you know, letting everybody write their own story about him, including the people within that locker room.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me.
Yeah. I mean, the Spurs are going to be in DC next week. And I was thinking like, man, maybe it'd be great to catch up with Kawhi. And then immediately afterwards, it's like, there's no chance that Kawhi is ever going to talk to anyone. And it's just, he's been in that sort of holding pattern all year. I think if there's one thing that we have really learned from the report from Woj is that, like, it certainly sounds like his teammates think he's ready and think he should be able to play. And that's been kind of like the vibe we've been getting for the last month or two, is like the Spurs feel like he's ready. And this is sort of more confirmation that everyone is getting kind of restless. And Kawhi, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like he's there yet. I hope he gets there before the playoffs. It's been cool. The Spurs are beginning to right the ship a little bit. And it'll be really great to have like even 80% Kawhi involved in the playoffs. But honestly, like, all bets are off at this point.
Well, have you heard this theory that he might not want to come back because he has to be the savior if he comes back? That's really impossible expectations to live up to. If they lose, everyone's going to blame him because he couldn't save the day.
Is that really a theory?
And that, yeah, I've heard people float that out there as just like an idea of why he might be, you know, like if he's not feeling 100% right, which I would hope he's not just sitting around being, you know, 100% right, just listening to Manu beg him to come back and deciding that he's not going to come back.
Yeah, nothing worse than disappointing Manu. That's the greatest crime for Golliver.
No, it really is. Not to mention Pop. And like Pop's been, you know, bending over backwards on this one to me. But I just think the only other explanation is he's worried he's going to get re-injured and it's going to compromise, you know, his earning power this summer, right? I mean, like, what are the other explanations? I mean, that's what's so perplexing about this situation is, like, how do you explain Kawhi's weirdness?
Yeah.
And you can't just write it off as like, oh, you know, Kawhi's a different guy. I don't think that justifies it. I mean, there's something motivating it. It's either fear of re-injury, you know, to change his ability to earn a supermax this summer,
mm-hmm.
or it's, you know, some fear of not being able to play at 100% and therefore, you know, not really helping the team as much as they want, or, you know, you fill in your own theory here, but there aren't that many possible motivations to explain what Kawhi's doing.
And I would add that, like, I think at the beginning of this, when there were rumors of a rift between Kawhi and the Spurs, a lot of people sort of connected the dots and said Kawhi wanted out, which he still might want out, but I don't think that this is part of that, because it doesn't seem like a smart strategy if you're about to force a trade to just sort of inexplicably sit out the season without good reason. So it's got to be something with his body and the way he feels, and, like, more power to it, but it's been really weird to watch it all unfold. But we have another Spurs question. But first, Ben, today's show is brought to you by 4Hymns. We have a new sponsor. Did you know, Ben, that 66% of men lose their hair by age 35? And the thing is, by the time you really start to notice hair loss, it's generally too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than replace the hair you've lost. So, do you have any bald spots? Is your hairline moving further and further back? What happens in a year from now if you keep losing your hair? We have a solution. Ben, what is the solution?
4hims.com. F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com. Andrew, this is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men. And sorry, ladies, this is 4hims.com. Maybe there'll be a counter site as well.
Hopefully.
But thanks to science, Andrew, balding can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. It's not going to be wigs. It's not going to be comb-overs. It's not going to be wearing a hat at inappropriate times to wear hats because you're embarrassed. You're going to have scientific solutions to your baldness. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions will help you keep your hair at a great price. And look, this isn't snake oil pills, gas station counter supplements. These are prescription solutions backed by science. This is no flat earth stuff, Andrew. This is the real deal.
Yes. No waiting room, no awkward doctor's visit. Save yourself hours by going to 4hims.com. It's really easy. All you have to do is answer a few quick questions and a doctor will review and prescribe you. And to make it even easier on you, all the products are shipped directly to your door. So order now. Our listeners can get a trial month of 4hims for just $5 right now while supplies last. See the website 4hims.com for full details. It would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/floor. That's 4hims.com/floor. Check out the offer. Get yourself some lush hair, like Alfred Payton. I don't know. Who else has good hair?
Lots of people have good hair, Andrew. F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/floor. 4hims.com/floor. Get a whole new do.
Getting back into it, Rodrigo says, assume that you guys have a button where when you push it, every player in the NBA turns into their best version, their prime version. In that scenario, who would have the best team? Would it still be the Warriors? What about the Spurs with prime Manu, prime Pau, prime Tony Parker, and prime Rudy Gay? I'm not sure how good prime Rudy Gay was, but... And then he also says, what about OKC with peak Melo? Or hell, maybe even Minnesota with 2011 Derrick Rose? It's a really good question. What do you think?
Well, I think that's how Kobe Altman constructed the Cavaliers. I think he assumed he was going to be able
this
to find that button.
Real,
he
got yeah.
Isaiah Thomas, Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade. I mean, that was a squad if you could have just turned back the clock on all those guys. I liked how Rodrigo left Kawhi and LaMarcus out of his like personally named list of Spurs. Somehow Rudy Gay cracked that one. I don't know what happened there. that would be a pretty good team. You know, I think the answer, though, is still the Warriors, because we've seen what these guys could do when they, you know, gun all out. I mean, it's 70-plus wins. I think the chemistry factor is so important when you're trying to put together, like, stars in their primes. They have to be able, willing to sacrifice and fit into a system. They just can't, you know, showboat and do their own thing. So I'm still going with Golden State. And also, don't forget, you got guys like David West coming off the bench. I mean, that guy was
that's a great
legit
point.
player in his prime. And they got some, you know, stragglers around there. Iguodala is another very, very, very legit player in his prime. So
prime Iggy makes them so goddamn unfair. That's a really good point.
Yeah, but I do like this idea, like, of the Spurs, because don't overlook, like, prime Dejounte Murray. What's that guy going to be?
I was thinking about that.
Four, five,
we can
6 years from
up
now?
Like that, because then if you get I was thinking about it with Dallas. Like, if you get Dennis Smith Jr. in his prime, like 27-year-old Dennis Smith with 27-year-old Dirk, and then you have Wesley Matthews. I mean, they're still not touching, like, the Warriors with prime Iggy, but, like, we would definitely add some contenders if this button were real.
Yeah, isn't, like, prime Harrison Barnes, like, a contradiction in terms? He's never going to be
true.
A prime.
Look, he's not a bad fourth option, man. He's been fine. It's just they need some star power down there.
I mean, Minnesota would be sick, though. Prime D. Rose, prime Cat, and prime Butler, and then, you know, whatever prime Wiggins looks like. That's a squad.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how.
I think Rodrigo kind of answered his own question when he asked the question, though. Sometimes you throw out all these teams. Come on, Rodrigo, let us do some of the heavy lifting, man.
Well, what I like about this question is it underscores just how unfair the Warriors are, because even in this ridiculous hypothetical scenario, they are almost certainly still the favorites. I mean, you'd have Houston with, like, prime Joe Johnson, but I'm not sure how, like, what that is really getting you. It would be more, the other thing that I like about it is it would be awesome to watch the peak Spurs go after the Warriors. But alas, this button isn't real. Anyways, moving on, you mentioned our guy Wiggins. Miguel says, Oladipo has deservingly been leading the discussion for most improved player. But who has the best case for most unimproved player? I immediately thought of Isaiah Thomas, but I feel like this title should not be based on injury. And if we're excluding injury, to me, I immediately thought of Andrew Wiggins. Did you have anyone else in mind?
I have a list, but, you know, feel free. Get us another round of hate mail from Minnesota. Go
no,
ahead and dig
the,
into Wiggins.
The Wiggins
hate.
Thing sort of speaks for itself at this point. We don't really have to say. He's like a version of DeMar DeRozan who hasn't refined his game yet and isn't really conducive to winning at this point in his career. And it's a little disappointing because he's been in that spot for about 3 years now and he just hasn't really taken a step forward. And it's still bizarre that he takes more shots than Karl Towns and still found a way to complain about it last week, apparently. So to me, he's the most frustrating player in the NBA, in part because of what should be possible with that Wolves team.
So I don't want to call this the most unimproved player award. I think we should call it the 50 Cent fall off award. I mean, everyone knows that great line, dang homie, in high school you was the man, homie. Like, I think that's sort of what we're looking for here.
Yeah.
And
let's get more
I had a number
from you
of,
on these episodes.
Yeah, I know. Every once in a while I break it out. It causes people to turn off, I realize. There's a couple guys who we could throw into this conversation. I mean, I think Carmelo's got to be in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
I think, Isaiah Thomas from him was a great nomination. I understand the health thing. Another guy who I think we should be throwing in terms of big-name players, what about Marc Gasol? You know, there was a time not that long ago where it's like, yeah, this guy is like all NBA. Like, you know, you squeeze him onto the third team. The center's kind of a weak position. He's still getting it done in Memphis. He's not getting anything done in Memphis. I mean, he's chucking three-pointers from 40 feet. He's calling out his teammates, got his coach fired. You know, they're losing 15 games straight. I realize, you know, he's the least of their concerns when you look at their payroll and everything else. I mean, they got a lot of other problems there, and Mike Conley's injury doesn't help things at all. It's a very obvious explanatory factor here. But Marc Gasol has not been great this year. A couple other guys who have got the injury bug whose stock has sunk hard this season to me, Avery Bradley, Rodney Hood, Dion Waiters. I think all those guys are, you know, really wishing for better days in the past.
Yeah.
But I have one really obscure name who I want to throw out there just kind of as a chuckle, you know, and that would be Aaron Aflalo. Now, last year, Aaron Aflalo shot 41% on threes. He started for a good chunk of the season in Sacramento. He made $12.5 million, and he averaged sort of a respectable 8 points per game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Aflalo is 32. It feels like he's 40, but he's not. In Orlando this year, he's shooting less than 40% from the field for Orlando. He's making basically, you know, roughly $2 million. He's off the bench for them, even though they're completely terrible. He's playing very limited minutes. He's averaging 3 points a game from a guy who was averaging, you know, 13 points a game 2 years ago
right.
for the Knicks. I mean, there was a time not that long ago that people were really excited when their team would trade for Aaron Aflalo as like that 3-and-D guy at the deadline. That time is long past. You look at him in both player efficiency and real plus minus. He's like the absolute dregs of the NBA, like bottom five, bottom 10 in both those categories. Andrew, that's not easy to do. It's very difficult to be completely atrocious by player efficiency rating and real plus minus. That means you're really working hard. So I think my nomination for this award is Aaron Aflalo.
Okay, but I don't think that's fair, because if we're being honest about Aflalo, his game fell off a cliff like probably 3 years ago. Like whatever the year was where Portland traded for him halfway through the year and he was like the missing piece that was going to put them over the top. And then everyone was like, I'm not sure Aaron Aflalo is actually that good. I think from there, there's been sort of a correction as on his value. Like, he was just as lost last year in Sacramento, whatever his 3-point percentage was. But, and I also like, as we run into this every time we have one of these questions, I don't like dinging guys who are on their way out of the league. But you're right that he's done well for himself salary wise. Congrats to Aaron Aflalo. I guess
the way I'll put it is this, you're right. He fell off the cliff 3 years ago, but then once he landed, he fell into an elevator shaft, right? And then that one took him down another few floors. Then he fell into a lake, and now he's down there with a scuba mask trying to figure out what happened.
Hey, man, he's still getting his checks. That's all that really matters. Anyone who's making money and playing out the string for Orlando, I have a soft spot for, because it's been pretty dark down there. But the other two reactions I had were, first of all, I have a theory on Rodney Hood. As someone who's been on the Rodney Hood bandwagon for the last couple of seasons, I think that the Cavs are actually winning the Rodney Hood trade right now, because they're getting all of the worst parts of the Rodney Hood experience out of the way before the playoffs start. Like, you've got the inexplicable shooting slump. You've got the injury where it takes him like an extra 2 or 3 weeks to come back for some reason, and no one can really explain what's wrong. And I think that like they're due for Rodney Hood to drop like 35 in a playoff game. And this is all leading to the like 3 week stretch where Rodney Hood looks amazing and everyone's like, oh my God, this is one of the most underrated players in the league.
Yeah, I heard somebody at a game recently refer to Rodney Hood by the nickname DNR, and I was like, why do you call him DNR? And he says, did not return.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
Because he gets injured in the game, he doesn't come back. I mean, that's a rough knock.
He has Anthony Davis joints and like maybe 20% of Anthony Davis's talent. But I'm not giving up hope for Rodney Hood in Cleveland, okay? Just everyone just wait on it and give him a chance. The other thing is, Marc Gasol is definitely the best possible choice for this one, because first of all, because we've been too mean to Andrew Wiggins. And second of all, because there were like 3 or 4 years there where people were claiming that Marc Gasol was like a top 10 player. And I think right now his value has really taken a hit. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here, because like, I'm not sure what teams would even trade for him this summer, but it does seem like we've hit the end of the line in Memphis. And so it's a sneaky big story that Marc Gasol doesn't seem to be great anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that their organization really did him a solid by coming out so hard saying, oh, he's still untradeable, he's our guy, we wouldn't trade him. You know, that was kind of their stance publicly right after Conley got injured and their season was falling apart and they fired Fizdale and everything. like the honest assessment was that they're not going to be able to get anything for him.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be a salary dump at this point. And that's rough because he was amazing for a really long time. Defensive player of the year, candidate multiple years, all NBA guy, like I mentioned earlier, but he's not that guy anymore. He's tried to adapt. And both Gasol brothers actually have been, you know, surprisingly effective in terms of how they've been able to change their game as, you know, things have gone away from kind of traditional post players here over the last couple of years. But his best days are behind him, and it's never fun to see that. And I do think he's a pretty strong candidate for the 50 Cent Fall Off Award.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on here, comment from Spike Eskin, the leader of Alt Sixers, who hit me up on Twitter and quoted me saying, "If Sam Hinkie hadn't gotten a superstar in the draft with his plan to get a superstar in the draft, it wouldn't have been considered successful. Great stuff, you moron." And then that led to all kinds of Alt Sixers acolytes trolling me in my mentions. And honestly, it had been too long since I had seen those people cursing me out. So I appreciate Spike for bringing me back to my roots as a Sixers heel. And he was referencing something I said during the tanking discussion on the last podcast, which is basically that, like, it's still kind of a coin flip on Embiid's health. Like, if Embiid is healthy, the Sixers plan is great. And if not, like, they're not as untouchable as they may appear. And what I meant by that, and what I meant in context, is basically that, like, the Sixers are currently the platonic ideal of tanking, and whenever we have these conversations, but it should be noted that it's not like they built some rock solid foundation that guarantees a decade of contending. And I think, like, it's telling whenever we talk about tanking that even in the best case scenario for tanking teams, if we're looking at recent history, there's still nothing promised for certain in Philadelphia. And was I taking a passive aggressive shot at Hinkie and the Sixers and light trolling? Absolutely. But I do think that it's something to keep in mind when we talk about this stuff.
Well, you're saying nothing's promised for Philadelphia. What about a first-round win over Washington? I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, there's a pretty good chance we could get Sixers-Wizards in the first round. That wasn't a scenario. When we were running through all of our dream scenarios a couple weeks ago for the Eastern Conference, I don't believe we touched on Sixers-Wizards. How would you be feeling in that series,
dude,
if it was Philly-Washington? How confident would you be? How much squirming would you do?
There would be significant amounts of squirming on my end. I do think that the Wizards would win that series, but I also can guarantee that I would have a heart attack like 5 or 6 games in, and just hopefully I can survive that and see it through to victory. But yeah, I mean, if that happens, there's definitely going to be some kind of bet between Open Floor and Rights to Ricky Sanchez, and I will definitely lose my mind for 10 days or 2 weeks. I should add, though, it was something that occurred to me after we recorded the other day, talking about tanking. Hinkie does deserve a lot of credit for, like, maximizing those tank years, because we're seeing all these other teams bottom out and really, like, they're still banking on the lottery. And Hinkie was able to take those 3 or 4 awful years and turn them into, like, twice as many lottery picks as they should have had, which is really smart, and most of these other teams aren't going to be able to do that. So that's another feather in the cap of the process trusters, is that, like, that his approach really was better executed than what we're seeing this year.
A few years ago, I was in, I think, I want to say it was San Antonio for a playoff game, and randomly Hasheem Thabeet sat down next to me. Like,
yeah,
I was in media row, and he just grabbed a seat. I want to say it was a Spurs playoff game. Maybe it was like the All-Star game 1 year, something like that, where he just randomly showed up, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if he had to, like, pay for his ticket to come here because he's not in the NBA anymore. Like, you know, why would he even, you know, bother showing up? Obviously, he just wanted to see a good basketball game. I'm not going to begrudge him for that. Do you think Jahlil Okafor pays for a ticket to go see the Sixers in the playoffs?
Oh, man. I don't know. Jahlil, it's not completely his fault that his game doesn't work. It's like, I feel bad because he should be decent, but he just has never been able to really get in shape. He can't keep up with anybody on defense, and his offense isn't good enough. Like, I don't know, man. You didn't need to take us to that dark place.
Well, look, because here's my theory for him. I had to, because you're mentioning how he got all these great lottery picks. Everybody loves to forget about what they did with Okafor. But look, you remember Rod Benson Boom, though, on Twitter?
Yes.
He was like, you know, we were talking about like the OG, you know, old guy Twitter classics. I mean, Boom, though.
I saw him being in a like bar an outspoken. This summer in Manhattan Beach, and he was wearing, he like started a clothing label, and it had a bunch of naked women on it, I think.
Perfect. That sounds exactly right. He's the big Johnson for the millennial generation. Yeah. Congratulations. But look, so he was like a G League player, and then for a while he was you know, trying to make it in the NBA, and then he went overseas. But he like found a second career just being the man in Korea. Like he would always be posting these videos of him just, you know, getting like 40 and 20 in Korea.
Uh-huh.
I think for Jahlil Okafor, like, the obvious answer is just China, right? Like, that's what you would expect.
Yeah.
I think he needs to go further off the map, find a new basketball frontier, and just absolutely dominate. Because if he wasn't playing against NBA competition, he could probably average 40-20. I mean, you just pick
a
random
point.
Country.
It's a really good point.
He could be the man.
Yeah. And I've thought about it often. Like, the idea of being a superstar in, like, Spain and playing somewhere near the coast and just making a lot of money, most of which I guess is tax-free. They pay for your housing. You're treated like a king. Like, maybe that's just better than being, like, a bench warmer for the Brooklyn Nets. I think you're right that there's a better future out there for Jahlil.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, what if he was just Mr. Iceland? You know, we got an email from Iceland. And shout out to that guy a couple of days ago. I mean, just pick an unexplored basketball frontier and go be the man. Like, get to the point where, like, the opposing coaches are throwing chairs at you because they believe it's unfair. You know, sort of what LeVar has done with, you know, his children kind of constructing the big baller league over there in Lithuania. Kind of like that. And, you know, look, Jahlil is not a big baller. We can agree on that. But I think it's time for a pivot with his career because this current storyline is just dying on the vine.
Yeah, it really is. No, that's a great call. All right, a couple more questions before we hit the podium. Richard in Australia says, there's a lot of excitement in my home city of Melbourne, Australia, with the announcement of a two-game series between Team USA and the Australian Boomers in August of 2019. The front page of our newspapers has photos of Steph, LeBron, KD next to Aussie players such as Ben Simmons, Patty Mills, Deli, and Jinglin' Joe Ingles. My question is, do you think top American players will fly thousands of miles to play what is basically two exhibition matches in their offseason? And he used kilometers. I substituted miles in there. But what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was front page news here. They stopped the presses on all the major newspapers to announce the Melbourne Midsummer Classic, you know, two games between Australia's players and the NBA players. No, we didn't even know, Richard. Actually, I did know because I follow a lot of Australian journalists on Twitter, so I did see it. But this is not going to be what you are hoping it's going to be, Richard.
First of all, you're going to get a solid lineup of NBA stars. You are definitely not going to get Steph, LeBron, KD, although Australia has good wine, I've heard, so maybe LeBron makes the trip, but you're probably not getting the A-listers, but you're going to get some legitimate NBA players. Second of all, I don't like how condescending you're being toward our all Australian listeners. Like, we should be encouraging their basketball fever.
Hey, nobody encourages Australia more than we do. I mean, we dwell on it. We love the Aussies down under. I'm just trying to keep it real, Andrew. This was not a thing, okay? It's a long way in advance. Your best hope, honestly, is that there's a lot of guys doing their promotional tours in China, and they somehow just kind of talk those guys in to making, like, the swing to Australia, which is not really a swing. It's a long flight.
Yeah.
The NBA has had some success with some of its global games trips, like going to Africa and being able to get like a large number of players to go and do that. So I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, terrible, but I would definitely bring the expectations down from Steph and LeBron. I think if you get one non-Aussie all-star, you're in good shape. But I do think, you know, the key here is the recruiting aspect. You need guys like Ben Simmons or Kyrie, you know, everyone's favorite Australian, or, you know, these other guys who have those local ties to kind of talk their buddies into it, like Joe Ingles. You know, maybe he can talk a Gordon Hayward into it, or you know, it's going to be that one degree of separation removed is how you're going to get anyone who is sort of a headlining player. You know, otherwise, you know, get ready for, hey, look, it's Patty Mills' homecoming. Yeah. You know?
I'd be into that. I mean, we'll take whatever we can get. Oh,
I would go immediately. Yeah, look, we're available. I'm not saying that, like, no one would
if
go.
If someone
we
wants
will
to
go,
pay
just,
for Ben and I to come to Melbourne in 2019, we are all in. My only other response, when you talk about recruiting, I'm just now reminded that, like, one of my favorite details of the last few years is finding out that all of the other Australian pro basketball players refer to Ben Simmons as the Yank. And I think that kind of encapsulates everything I find sort of annoying about Ben Simmons, is that he's not down with the Aussie basketball clique. He didn't play for a Team Australia 2 years ago in the Olympics. But hopefully they can sort of mend those fences and Ben Simmons can get involved, because it would be really fun to have him playing basically like the LeBron role with Dele and Patty Mills and Joe Ingles around him.
No, that's my dream team. That's awesome. Yeah, let's do it. I Australians own the nickname game too. I mean, we got to give them credit. A lot of times they're just adding O or Y to the end of whatever your name is to abbreviate. I think they call you Sharpie, right? Yeah. To me, that's endlessly funny. You know, anytime we could get that in the mix, and the Yank is like not even derivative of that, and still a phenomenal nickname.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Gall in Israel says, I regularly listen to your podcast. I enjoy Ben's sarcasm and Andrew's Wizards hopes and lack of connection to NBA reality, which is pretty rough. He says, do you guys think the NBA should have a global tour during the season? Should they try overtaking the mediocre EuroLeague? First of all, I don't think the EuroLeague is that mediocre, but the reason I included this question is because I do think it would be pretty great if the NBA adds two teams and then relegates two teams to Europe every year. This is an idea that will never happen, but basically I fielded this email during a Phoenix Suns game like last week, and I think the idea of sending the Phoenix Suns to play in Spain in like the ACB league would be pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, you could have like the Lisbon Magic versus the Barcelona Suns.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? You know, start punishing some of these teams.
I mean, I'll just repeat something I've said previously. I think they should take the current global games or whatever they call it, turn it into a little midseason tournament, and then make it a little bit more organized. So it's not just one random game in Mexico City and then one random game in London or whatever. Like, you know, get a whole bunch of teams over there, and maybe you do a tour where a game in Rome, a game in Paris, you know, a game in Berlin, a game in London, and then somebody gets a trophy for that.
That'd be cool.
Obviously, you're not going to be able to send all 30 teams over there, but, you know, you handpick, say, just the division winners, and they play a series of normal regular season games, but you just call it the Global Games Cup.
Yeah.
Whoever has the best record at the end of that. To me, that would be fun, and it wouldn't be that crazy. And, you know, maybe we wouldn't have to hear about the whining from, you know, Boston like we heard this year. You know, if you're going over there and you're staying over there, kind of getting acclimated to the time zones, you know, you play a series of four games, maybe you come back and, you know, you get the All-Star break or something along those lines. I think that could be cool, and I'd be all for it. And just, you know, his general premise of his question was like, should the NBA step up and be even more global than it is? And I think you and me are fully on board with that. Like, anything that has to do with spreading the game outside of the United States' border, we are 100% in favor.
100%. Absolutely. To be clear, there would be a lot of whining if you were sending teams over there for like 3 weeks. But it would be really cool. So maybe in like 10 or 15 years, the NBA will get there. But keeping it global, with our first question for the podium, Sean in London has a response to our bandwagon discussion at the beginning of last Friday's episode. He says, you guys may have overlooked a critical factor for fans abroad making their franchise decisions. Branding, name, logo, uniforms. When choosing a favorite team from abroad, liking a team's roster is not enough. The whole package has to be up your street. You have to be happy wearing the uniform or feel comfortable dropping the team's name in conversation. For example, no one in England is going to ever choose the Nuggets. A nugget head is an insult used to call someone a dumbass. Also, its first association is likely to be with a chicken nugget, not a piece of precious metal. And who wants to sport that ugly yellow lettering on their chest? The Celtics also lose out. That cheesy cartoon man just looks so incredibly punchable. And think about this.
Whoa. Sean in London getting this serious anti-Irish sentiment going.
Yeah, he's trying that's to really true.
Restart the,
that's true.
Restart the wars. Okay.
He says, do you know anyone whose favorite color is green? Next, the Clippers. For us in London, a Clipper is a water taxi. But the first thing that springs to mind is toenail clippers. Hardly inspiring stuff. Branding may not be the only thing that matters, but it must play a factor. Just a thought. I, for one, am happy being affiliated with the Timberwolves uniform and logo, at least until Jimmy Butler moves on. A great email, great point, and it's really a blind spot for us as our knowledge of slang around the world is sorely lacking. I would point out that the Sixers would also be a problem for people in London. It's sort of like a eternal reminder that you lost the war. But good luck with his Timberwolves fandom. I'm happy for him.
Incredible email. I didn't expect him to just settle on the Timberwolves of all teams as having like the coolest branding and the coolest name, but it did remind me, have you ever watched the show Top Boy on Netflix? It's like The Wire, but set in London.
No.
It only had one season. Okay. Well, there's a lot of people who have sort of like the patois slang, I believe is what it's called, in that show. And after watching it, I mean, his talk about the nugget head brought this up to mind because I was like in my own interior monologue, I was speaking in like that West Indian slang to myself constantly and using all their slang for like 3 weeks straight. And it was, you know, something I certainly did not do in public, but that's a great show if you want to get a little deeper into, you know, some of the terminology used over in Britain. In terms of which teams have the best branding, logo, color schemes, etc., this could be a biased pick, but I feel like the Trailblazers actually do pretty well here. Because, like, first of all, trailblazing is sort of like this American ideal. So if you're coming from overseas, isn't that like Captain America? You know, it's like Lewis and Clark trailblazing across the country. The pinwheel logo is always awesome.
Yeah.
And then
the logo,
black
you're
and
not
going to
lose with the Blazers logo. I think they win even in American circles. I think they have one of the coolest logos in sports.
Yeah, and they're just a solid classic color scheme too, right? So I feel like that is a team where they didn't really come up in our initial discussion of bandwagon teams all that much. I think maybe you raised them, but we didn't dwell on
it.
But they do pretty well in terms of, you know, the peripheral issues, sort of the branding and the visibility type issues. And I mean, I remember back in the days, even when they were like a laughingstock, you know, the quote unquote Jailblazers era, like, was there anything cooler than a Bonzi Wells or a Rasheed Wallace jersey?
Yeah.
You know, like,
look,
Fabulous had like the entire 2003 Blazers jerseys on lock in like various music videos for like 3 years straight. So, and there's like a countercultural element to them as well, a hipness, if you will. So, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a biased nomination here, but that's what really first came to mind when Sean mentioned
yeah,
this.
Yeah. And to be clear, that era of the Blazers is definitely my favorite Blazers era of all time. It's, I grew up on them and grew up rooting for them to beat Kobe and Shaq. So I'll always have a soft spot for Sheed and Bonzi and Damon Stoudemire. Damon Stoudemire and Rasheed Wallace got arrested for weed driving from Seattle to Portland in a yellow Hummer. And it was one of my first big like NBA scandals back in like 1999 or something. But the only other thing, I would add two things. One, the Jazz jerseys are also part of why I recommended them. I've really come to enjoy the like sunset jerseys that they've been rocking more and more lately. And I think I may have made fun of them when they were first released or made fun of them for pandering specifically to you. But I love those jerseys, and that's another reason to get in on the Jazz. And then the other thing is
Red Rock, Golden Dreams.
Yeah.
They're beautiful jerseys. I don't know if, have you heard the stories about how they sold out so much they're being like resold on eBay for like $350?
No.
They're like more expensive than Jordans in some parts of Utah because like they didn't print up enough of those jerseys and everybody wants to buy the Donovan Mitchell jersey. Great story by someone in their local media. Unfortunately, I don't have his name offhand, but just go Google it. Jazz jerseys sold out. It's really quite remarkable. And you know, maybe it's because some members of the Open Floor Globe took your advice, Andrew. Maybe they're just driving
maybe
up the local prices.
Maybe
there.
I don't know if I like the jerseys that much, but they're pretty awesome. Moving on here, Dan Rubenstein says, how the hell did you guys get scooped on the NBA Lego beat? Dan Rubenstein, longtime college football writer and video host. This is our second celebrity listener, and he's referencing, of course, Jake Fisher's story on Miles Turner's like Lego fandom, and like I wouldn't say obsession, but he's definitely a brickhead.
Yeah, Jake Fisher wrote a nice piece on it for SI. It was great. Dan is not only a video host and a writer, he's a really, really good podcaster too, Andrew. So it was an honor to have him send in this nomination.
It's true. I also think he's from Oregon, right?
Either that or he's just a Ducks fan.
Yeah,
I don't know
Ducks
his full
fan.
Backstory.
He's a Ducks
You're
fan
asking
from
me.
LA. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm not trying to like, you know, dig up his social security number. I'm just trying to give him a compliment. I don't know why you always have to make it so weird. But look, my point was this. The best part of the article on Miles Turner's Lego obsession was when he mentioned how he screwed up one piece early in his build and he had to go back all the way to the beginning, and how frustrated and how agonized he was when that happened. Because, Andrew, what have I said? It's about the perfect build. That's what we strive for. And when you have that imperfection, it will haunt you. And this is a future all-star in my mind now, Miles Turner. Before this article, I thought, you know, he had good potential, but now I'm pretty convinced he's going to be a perennial all-star given how he spends his free time. And just take it from him. If you didn't believe me about the importance of a perfect build and trying to just take every single piece one by one, dropping none on the ground and making no mistakes, Miles Turner will reinforce that message in that article. I think it's a great lesson for people of all ages and persuasions.
Yeah, everyone go check it out. Turner is a certified brickhead. And he also added Lego Official and said, y'all really should raise the age suggestion on the boxes for your boy. So I think...
That's what I said.
Look, we can officially move Miles Turner into the top 10 under 23 rankings, and we apologize for our earlier oversight. Moving on, we need, in the interest of equal time, here are a couple notes from Lord of the Rings fans. First of all, Gerald says, as Ben Golliver always says, we shouldn't judge a player on their worst or best nights. This applies to Lord of the Rings. How can Andrew Sharp completely disregard the rest of the series after only watching the first 45 minutes of the movie? When will you learn, Sharp? Thank you for not judging me, Gerald. Just allow me to have my worst night. Isaac says, the comparison of Lord of the Rings to Bill Russell is wrong. Lord of the Rings is Michael Jordan and Harry Potter is Dion Waiters. Sure, Dion Waiters is newer and he plays in an era where the style is more pleasing, but he's nowhere near the player Jordan was, despite the belief to the contrary. And then there were other people who compared Lord of the Rings to Michael Jordan and Harry Potter was Kobe Bryant. And then they also got meaner, where Lord of the Rings was Tim Duncan and Harry Potter was Dwight Howard, which really cut deep. I was compared by several emailers to LeVar Ball. One emailer compared me to Donald Trump. And then Christian added, the basketball gods are listening, which means only one thing. Andrew, your beloved Wizards will never win a championship, and it's because of your disrespect to the Lord of the Rings Wizards. And that's the highlights from like 75 Lord of the Rings emailers. And all I can say,
first of all, I want to point out real quick, I did make the Jordan to Harold Miner comparison. That was pretty close to Isaac's Jordan to Dion Waiters comparison. So I'm feeling pretty good about my ability to comp these things that I have no ideas about. And I'd also add this, Andrew.
What?
This was more representative than last week's when you tried to set it up as one person in favor of you and one person against you, because, you know, the emails were running a solid 90-10 against you with, you know, 45% basically being death threats.
Yes.
But it was not completely representative, and we would have to make basically an entire Tumblr website to house all of the emails that we got, because the way they deconstructed you, I mean, you know, there's like more than one way to skin a cat. I mean, there's like 75 ways to diss Andrew Sharp is what we learned this week. I mean, the creativity and how people tried to set you straight was shocking. And it actually made me a little sad, because we had a lot of smart people email in on this subject and you wasted all of their time. I mean, you really took all of their brain power and you threw it onto something that could be, you know, not be more meaningless. And I got to say, I'm impressed. You know,
well,
it's like,
listen,
you're like Baxter eating the wheel of cheese. Gotta hand it to you. Very, very impressive.
One thing that we learned for sure is that brevity is not a specialty of Lord of the Rings fans, because we got a lot of like 1500 word breakdowns comparing the two and lecturing me. And I got a lot of like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. So I'm not going to apologize. You're free to believe whatever you want. All I can say is, for the people who were mad at me for turning off Lord of the Rings after 45 minutes, I would have watched more than 45 minutes if it weren't so boring. And, you know, Harry Potter is clearly superior, but we're all free to believe whatever we want. And if you like Lord of the Rings, more power to you, you know? Shout out to Frodo and Bilbo.
Look, I just want to say this. All the Lord of the Rings people who just listened to Andrew not budge an inch off of a completely incorrect opinion, despite your overwhelming and very well thought out emails, just because, you know, he wants to just reside in his own opinion. I feel all of your pain. Okay. This is what I've been dealing with for 2 years. And
dude,
this is the same guy who called Kevin Durant a role player and he meant it. I understand how frustrating that can be, but this is Andrew's charm. This is his gift. Okay. He will find ways to buck convention in new and unprecedented fashion week after week after week. This is why we love Andrew.
Look,
this is why he's really the one who carries the podcast. And so for everyone who's threatening to unsubscribe, like I mentioned earlier, or, you know, felt the need to send their first ever email to a media member to set Andrew straight, just realize that I think ultimately Andrew's the one who won here. Let's congratulate him because of his ability to pull these feelings out of you. And let's please, Andrew, let's please, please move forward from this subject.
Can I ask you something? Have you ever watched Lord of the Rings?
Andrew, for the 9th time, no, I don't care.
Right.
It's not reality.
Because for the record, one of the reasons I turned it off is because I pressed pause and realized that there were like 2.5 hours left, even 45 minutes in. And I was just like, no, I'm out on this. So anyways, we love all of you. The emails have been relentlessly entertaining. And the last question is from Kyle, who says, the West Coast of Ireland is beautiful. Irish people are great. Also, does Andrew think that the West Coast of Ireland doesn't have internet? I do know that the West Coast of Ireland has internet. I spent a summer in Ireland when I was in college and loved it, but I missed the finals between the Heat and Mavericks because I couldn't find anywhere to watch basketball. So that's why I mentioned that. And on that note, I am going to go disappear to the West Coast of Ireland and not read these Lord of the Rings emails anymore.
I love this email from Kyle because we were talking about like abandoned islands, you know, like, oh, you know, we don't want to come back from civilization. And you're like, yeah, like Ireland, as if it's like the middle of nowhere.
I was,
you know what? It reminded me of when I was in college and, you know, people would be like, you know, what state are you from? And I'd say Oregon. And most of the people who attended my college in Baltimore, like, they're all like East Coast people. So they'd be like, oh, Oregon, that's cool. That's like by Iowa, right? You know, it's like they viewed it just everything basically west of the Appalachians, like, was just completely not on the map. And I feel like you kind of gave that same
treatment to
Ireland.
Well, no. Okay.
Ireland
for the record, though, I spent 2 months in Kilkenny and that was awesome. And then I spent 2 weeks in County Mayo. And so County Mayo is really pretty remote. So I'm not throwing shots at like the urban version of Ireland, but what I'm dreaming about is the West Coast and County Mayo.
Fantastic. Look, if you guys want to host Andrew at your cottage, if you've got internet access, electricity or water, please let him know. He's dying to go back. Feel free to email in your offers to openfloormail@gmail.com. openfloormail@gmail.com. Andrew, they also need to go to the Apple Podcast app. They need to find Open Floor's page. Very easy to find. Just search Open Floor. Scroll down. It says rate and review. Give it a 5-star review for all of the crazy, hilarious hijinks that Sharp's been bringing to the table here over these last couple of weeks. Show your support and do not automatically unsubscribe like a few of our angriest listeners. We did not appreciate those emails, guys, whatsoever. Andrew, until next week, I'll talk
to you. All
right,
man. Take it easy.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, Your Favorite Team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, Your Favorite Team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.